Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. I hope this conversation will serve you on your own path of living life fully and courageously. The inner game is our relationship to our purpose, to the contribution we want to be in bringing forth a more beautiful world. These are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives. An opportunity to hear about how these people are growing personally and spiritually, and how that strengthens their organization and or efforts to make a bigger difference. Our guest today is Scott Barta, whose Indian heritage is Sioux and Winnebago. Scott's parents were active in the American Indian movement throughout the 70s. And he is continuing their example of activism, especially as it relates to bringing women back into roles of leadership. Scott's partner is Tara Sheehan, who was our guest last month. So welcome, Scott. Really happy to have you here on the show.
Hi, thank you, Gwen. Thanks for having me.
You were telling me that your mom was the national secretary of the American Indian Movement, and your dad was highly involved. So you really had a front row seat to what was, I think, you know, you could pretty much call the civil rights movement for Native Americans. And I just wonder if you could, tell people a little bit about the American Indian Movement. You know, why you think it started, what was going on in the 70s there, and what was it trying to do at that point in the game?
Yeah, in 1968, the American Indian Movement AIM was started in Minneapolis, Minnesota, by some Ojibwe Indian men that lived in the city and had been in and out of prisons, you know, struggling with alcoholism and living on the streets. They were relocated to the cities off the reservations through the government policies at the time, which was to get the Indians off the land and take full control of the resources on those reservations. So that movement started to, you know, kind of allow people to see that it was okay for an indigenous red person to have long hair or to burn sage or possess eagle feathers or have a spiritual way of life that they have had for millions of years. So that at the time it was, like you said, after the civil rights movement for black people and in the country, the red people then had their turn, you know, which culminated in 1973 with the armed gun battle with federal, you know, U.S. government military forces at Wounded Knee, South Dakota, and the Pine Ridge Reservation.
Okay.
So what AIM did was really save that way of life, that, you know, the ceremonies, the Sundance that was outlawed, the sweat lodge that a lot of people have gone through now, even burning sage that, you know, a lot of people do, even non-Indians, which is great today, that they respect and honor that plant and the way of life of indigenous people. So that's kind of what AIM did back in the 70s.
And tell us a little bit about some of the things that you observed as a small boy. You said you were probably 10 or 11 during that time. Give us an idea of what it looked like that AIM was starting to have happen.
Yeah, what I was really fascinated by was the listening to the grandmas make their pleas, you know, what they were going through, that really allowed the people to see at the family level, you know, with the children, what was happening. And so it really brought that balance back that was, you know, we had been taught on the reservations that there's the chief, the tribal chief, which was set up by the government as a puppet, and then there's the governor of the state, and there's the president, and there's God, and there's all the, you know, hierarchies that the, you know, male dominating systems that came in 1492, what was being forced onto us. And so mm-hmm. that was what our reservation life was like. So then when the women and the men were able to stand up together to say, wait, enough is enough. We can be who we are as beautiful indigenous people and not be ashamed or afraid or, you know, or worried about going to jail for having an eagle feather in our hair or whatever our way of life was. And so I witnessed that those spiritual people, both women and men, that brought the burning of sage to the circle, that formed these circles, you know, as we had meetings and protests and takeovers and occupations, that it was always, you know, done with that kind of that spiritual intention. The base was always spiritual in nature. So,
oh, it's really beautiful. For those of us who aren't as familiar with Indigenous ways, is it accurate to say that there was sort of across the board pretty great equality between men and women in terms of governance in Indigenous councils and circles?
Today, no. In 1934, the government finally got Indigenous women out of the circle by forming through an illegal act of Congress, the 1934 Indian Reorganization Act, IRA Act, which got rid of the women and established a 7-member board of directors of Indian men that were, you know, so they could be bought off and manipulated to, you know, hand over all the resources, the gold, coal, uranium, timber, whatever was on the reservation. So that's what really we've been under the last 90 years or whatever. So that's the,
so that's,
you know, the real issue and the heart of the problem of now with Indigenous people is today is that they don't know, they've lost that culture, that awareness through the language of how they used to manage a community circle women, circles of women and men called Oyate Omanichia.
So it used to be that there was greater equality, but then that was stripped away.
Prior to 1492 or on the Great Plains, prior to, you know, 1851, which is happens to be the year of the 1851 treaty, the last legal treaty that was developed by the U.S. government and the Dakota Nation, Sioux Nation, that utilized that. Women in each camp, and circles of women and men in each encampment in each community that authorized that particular treaty. And after that, it was handpicked paper chiefs that the government would work with to try to get their policies through or occupation sanctioned, you know, somehow. So
got it. So you were telling me that when you and Tara were at Standing Rock, you noticed the greater voice of the women coming back in terms of leadership. Tell us a little bit about the significance of that.
And that's a area that needs to be really figured out as far as like leadership, mm-hmm. you know, that whole concept, which again is a foreign concept forced onto Indigenous people, where everybody has a say and a voice in community governing, you know, whether you're moccasin maker or arrow maker or a great singer or a great orator. There's no really leaders per se. There's everybody has a role with different expert abilities within the community, and that's really part of, that's what Oyate Omanichia is all about, is that it's not matriarchal, it's not patriarchal, it's just both balanced, because we have
everybody in it together.
Dakota really maintained that grandmother earth the green color and grandfather's guy the blue color, versus like a god or a story that has confused the people to get away from that grandmother earth, you know, understanding, because you know, the powers that be that came in to occupy and to control or change, that it can't be grandmother earth, it has to be a planet or a globe that can be exploited, you know, otherwise the whole system, you know, is exposed as against grandmother earth. So that's kind of what the big secret is, you know, currently.
And what other things do you think came out of the efforts at Standing Rock that were important that you'd like to, you know, see built upon?
Exactly. The spark that was ignited there in Standing Rock, which brought non-Indian people to the aid of the Indian people, who were, you know, Indigenous people are looked at as, you know, the original environmentalists, you know.
Right.
However, you know, with the male dominating system of the tribal council, the IRA government, 1934 Act governments, it's not really that way now, because there's, you know, there's a lot of non-Indians that won't sell the Mother Earth, but there's a lot of Indians that will today. So it's kind of turned around, so we've become very Americanized. So that spark that was started there at Standing Rock to look at our water sources. And beyond that is to challenge those people that went to Standing Rock to go home and clean up the creek out their backyard, make sure the fluoride's not running through their faucets in their sink in their bathroom and in their showers, which is a deadly neurotoxin. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, to carry that forth into the future, not just have it be a one-off, go to Standing Rock, raise the fist, buy your way to heaven, feel proud, whatever, and then go home to, a mess in your family, in your community, whatever, there's still oppression, there's still, male-dominating systems that control and manipulate those goings-on at home. So that's kind of the importance that I see as Standing Rock, is that it's a start now that we can make that dialogue about Grandmother Earth. We can make that dialogue about women in a circle, welcoming back women into the circle, creating them circles and communities. That's what I got from Standing Rock.
Mm. So many beautiful lessons. And isn't that the case, that the challenge is always to bring the lessons home and integrate them into our mundane, sometimes everyday lives. Well, this is...
Yeah. You see that with other ceremonies too, like peyote, yeah. Native American Church, or ayahuasca that a lot of non-Indians are doing today, or even marijuana, smoking marijuana, or drinking beer, which has hops and barley and whatnot. Those are plants. Those are sacred plants. And if you look at it in that way and honor that plant, while you're doing these ceremonies, it's really going to bring the level of human consciousness up to a good place where we can start welcoming back bison, welcoming back the wolf, welcoming back nature, not kill dandelions and whatnot. Because the contamination, the chemicals get in the water and people drink and get cancer. And everybody's complaining about cancer and wearing pink ribbons, but we just have to get rid of the chemicals and then we'll be okay,
Right. Keep honoring that connection with Mother Earth that is always there if we allow
yes,
it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Scott Barta, and we're talking about some of the lessons that he's seen through his experience as someone who grew up in the Native American culture and in the American Indian movement. And, I'm always curious, because a lot of Indians use Indian instead of Native American. A lot of white people, use the term Native American. Should we have some consciousness about that terminology?
We go by Indigenous Red Indian Nations because people know us as Indians, so we say Indigenous Red Nations, Indigenous Red Indian Nations, so people know that is the people from Great Turtle Island, called the Western Hemisphere.
So is it okay to say Native American, or should you just say, how should we refer to?
Yeah, not until you understand where the term Native American came in 1974, I believe, in the early 70s, Congress wanted to give money to some Puerto Ricans and Hawaiians and inner city blacks, and so they developed the term Native American so that they could take funds from the American Indian pot of money that I think was like close to $1 billion a year that they gave crumbs to all the reservations. But they didn't want to give extra tax money, added tax money to those groups. So they used the term Native American so that they could include all those and then therefore take the money out of the Indian pot.
So it's not really that nice a term to be using, it sounds like.
Yeah, and it denies our nationhood as human beings. We're a Dakota nation.
Yeah.
We're not American nation, or we're
right.
Hopi nation. We're not American nation. That should be perfectly acceptable to American people, and not they shouldn't have to feel guilty about it that, hey, wait a minute, we conquered you and you're now us.
Mm.
That's kind of a racist mentality,
mm-hmm. Got it. That's a really important perspective. So here on The Inner Game, we often talk about our, sort of a personal journey and personal practices. So I wanted to get a chance to ask you about a skill or a practice you've developed or are developing that's making a difference in the work and, the journey that you're on right now.
Yeah, I do what's called Life Renewal Lodge ceremonies, commonly known as the Sweat Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
However, the old ancient way of doing it is to just thank the rock and the water that you use in that ceremony. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult for people who are caught up in their ego to stoop to that level, you know, because they think they want to go in there and pray to God and make buy their way to heaven. So if you look at the ancient ceremony, like the sun dance, it's not about going in 4 days and praying to, you know, the creator. It's about going in 4 days and thanking the moon for giving the tides to bring the clouds to feed our crops and nourish our trees with water, and thanking the sun for giving us that spark of life in our hearts. And that's really what those ceremonies are about. So in my journey, which is always evolving, and I'm always learning from, you know, all peoples and all of nature, that to where I'm at today is different than where I was at yesterday or 10 years ago or right. 30 years ago, because I have an open mind, you know, because I don't want to get Alzheimer's and have a closed mind and be stuck in my way. I want to, you know, maintain that openness to nature to allow the gifts of all the plants and the animals and the insects to give me the information I need to be a happy and contented, to be a happy person, to have a contented life. Mm. So I use that in the lodge, and I'm developing some curriculum now, some workshops that utilize some of those teachings to help people to see their inner self, how they can cure without getting drugs from a doctor or listening to a doctor, but just cure themselves through their own practices of awareness of nature and how to respect and honor plants and rocks and water and all the things of nature.
That seems to be something that's there's a lot more awareness of lately, is the importance of not just the importance of being outside and being active outside, but really about that connection to nature, that relationship that we have to the natural world, which, you know, is something we tend to identify with indigenous peoples, because that relationship's so strong. But it's really, you know, something that's inherent and necessary for all of us. Do you see your own relationship to nature changing and deepening, or in any ways that you want to talk about?
Yeah, exactly. Like just like you said, it's for all people, you know, that we all forgot, you know, 10,000 years ago, our grandmother Earth, you know, because the system of greed was put onto people to exploit that and not look at that as our grandmother. So we're all caught up into that in one way or the other. And we all need a daily practice, you know, such as simple natural nasal breathing. But like my wife and partner, Tara, is a master at that. And it can make you, you know, feel the state of being calm and peaceful by practicing this simple nasal breathing. And that's like a hidden lost art that everybody should do, because that's why we have noses. Mm-hmm. So that kind of thing I put in our Life Renewal Lodge. They said you sit up when the water's poured on the hot rock and the steam comes, you breathe that in your nose. That was always said, you breathe that in your nose. And even though it kind of would hurt the inside of your nose because it's really hot, you still do that. So you breathe, you learn to breathe real slowly and carefully. And then with that awareness, you know, that stimulates the calm and peace nerve, you know, the vagus nerve, you know, with nasal breathing versus the mouth breathing, the fear, fight or flight amygdala in the brain, that fear nerve through mouth breathing. That's a really big thing. And that needs to be really talked about and practiced and shared with the children, the youth, that they need to really, really do that too. You know, with the suicide and all the things that are going on, and the alcoholism and drug abuse, use and abuse, that's a really important thing that can, you know, really easily, quite simply curb that, knowing that your thinking causes your suffering, so nothing else. It's just you, how you want to look at things. A skunk smells good or a skunk smells bad. It's your choice. You know, you don't have to, you know, buy into everybody's, you know, belief systems or whatever.
Mm. And I know you've been doing a lot more meditative work lately, and I've been looking at the power of your thoughts to create your experience. What is the significance of that you see to our ability to create the future?
Yes, I recently traveled back from India, where the One World Academy, OWA, has a great training, has many great trainings where they get you to release all your fears, all your thoughts, and just be in a state where you can then access every cell of your body that has the answer to all our issues and problems, but we can't solve them because we're too busy using our brains and thinking. So once you relax and don't think about, oh, is my rent due, or does my girlfriend like me, or what do people think about the car I drive, or whatever. If you're caught up in that, you can't get to that point where the wisdom that's inside of us, each of us, that can give us the answers, you know, immediately, you know, once we're freed of our suffering thoughts, you know.
Do you think that's similar to what happens when you're deeply connected to nature, that wisdom is more available?
Yeah, I see. Now what I've learned that is I don't want to be doing other things, you know, like on my phone, because I might miss the chirping of a bird, or, you know, the wind blowing on the aspen leaves, or, you know, see a cloud float by, or those kind of things are really, you know, that over the years I've, you know, been able to come to that point, and it's really good. I don't need something else outside entertainment to make me feel good, or, you know, think that I need a false, you know, something that is momentary that I can get a thrill off, and then I'm back to my same miserable self. That's like the one-off mentality the era that we're living in now. Is like, oh, I'm going to go to a Sundance and feel good and then go back to misery the rest of the year. I'm going to go to an ayahuasca ceremony and feel really good, but then I'm going to go back and do the same, you know, insane things where I don't learn my lessons with that through that sacred plant. So that's kind of where I'm at now is, you know, trying to figure that out, a narrative to give back to all my relatives, all the human beings, and to show them here's a way that you can, you know, really get through all the drama and trauma of the world, you know, that we try to think makes us be this way, but it's really not that way. It's just our thinking causes our suffering, and that we can live in a beautiful state if we, you know, allow ourselves to, by getting rid of all of our silly thoughts, you know, and beliefs.
I would also love to ask you just about a vision that you have of the future that includes that balance of everyone at the table, man and woman and whatever other distinctions
yes,
we want to make
I'm working
sure
on
are there.
A women's gathering where men and women come together and we talk about Oyate Omaniche and, you know, our ancient manner of governing in communities. And, you know, circles could be in Carbondale, Colorado, in the Roaring Fork Valley, where women come together and men and resolve issues of, like, fracking or whatever's going on there. And same way with, like, on the reservation in Pine Ridge, where that language is from, Oyate Omaniche, people circle gathering of men and women in a circle, that can be there and reintroduced there through gatherings that share that knowledge and those understandings with the people there, and have them go back into their communities and actually formulate those Oyate Omaniche gatherings within their communities.
What do you think is the contribution of women specifically that's been missing for so long? What are some of the things
yeah,
that you see?
Yeah, we're starting also a fire, a group that we build fires. And so with the fires, spark of life from the sun that sparks the wood, which represents the female, the water. So that's male and female balance. And the smoke is like the offspring. That's the life. And so if people look at a fire, a common fire that we all had 10,000 years ago when they found fire and had good families and dances and songs and stories. And then, you know, until the male dominating systems, you know, took that over. So to get back to the fire is a good place to start with that knowledge about Oyate Omaniche, for example, and discuss and figure out how to do these things once again to make our communities happy once again.
We're starting to see more festivals and community gatherings that gather around bonfires, and there's probably a lot of great wisdom that will be supported through that practice as it expands. So thank you so much, Scott. Thank you. It's been so wonderful to get to speak with you. Appreciate you being on the show. And
thank you, Gwen. Yes, thank you.
And I just want to thank everyone for listening today. If you have a question for Scott or for me, you can always join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. And the page acts as a forum to continue these conversations. And you can find out where to listen to past shows there as well. So thank you again. The Inner Game will now be happening monthly on the first Thursday of every month. So looking forward to this regular practice of having this conversation. And we will see you again soon.
Seeds are hopeful, dewdrops fleeting, oak trees crooked, redwoods straight, and they are not known to the sleeping, but you, my child, are awake. You, my child, are awake. You, my child.